22 or Death Holler brought us Season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. And now Death Holler brings us the most shocking season ever.
Daniel Parks.
Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
No, except the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Holler brings back the dead. Remember, when you're in Death Holler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.
Welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your elderly host, the Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always is my co-host and fellow Gemini, Law Urena. Are you ready to celebrate, Urena?
Woohoo! So excited.
That's right, folks. It's June, and that means it's time to party. We are celebrating our birthday month. Wait, did y'all think we're talking about something, celebrating something else? And what better way to do that than to share our favorite zombie movies with you lovely people? Now, technically, my movie isn't my favorite zombie movie. It probably rounds out the top five, but I think it's criminally underrated and needs to be seen and be on more people's radars. And Urena's pick might be a controversial one, especially to the video game purist out there. However, having said that, dust off that Mac-10, pack a couple of green herbs, and don't trust the shady pharmaceutical companies or comets as we discuss Night of the Comet and Resident Evil, Welcome to Raccoon City. First, if you're enjoying the podcast, we'd appreciate it if you would take the time to like, comment, and subscribe on whatever podcast platform you prefer. It helps us get more visibility on podcast listings and helps us grow. Also, consider following us on social media. You can find us on TikTok and Twitter under Death Holler Pod, and we can be found on Instagram and Facebook under Death Holler Podcast. We appreciate everyone who listens and hope you enjoy the show. First movie, my pick for my birthday month pick is Night of the Comet from 1984. Tagline, it was the last thing on Earth they ever expected.
It kind of goes with like Last Man on Earth, you know?
Yeah.
And kind of has, I don't know, I mean... It's not bad. It's not great, though.
It's not the best ever, but
it works. Yeah.
Directed by Tom Eberhardt, also written by Tom Eberhardt. Music by David Campbell. Made on a budget of $700,000, made $14.4 million.
Okay, I'm sorry. What? It made 14. So it does get the credit it deserves. It did really
not
good.
Not really, because if you bring this movie up, nobody's ever heard of it.
I mean, that's true. I have not seen it. I've heard of it. I have not seen it.
Principal players. We have Catherine Mary Stewart playing Regina Belmont, the arcade playing machine gun toting teenage protagonist. She's playing. She's very good, apparently, at the arcade Tempest. She was in, also starred in another movie about arcade player called The Last Starfighter. She was in Weekend at Bernie's, which technically Weekend at Bernie's 2 is a zombie movie.
That's
we'll
true.
Leave that be. And then The Girl Next Door, the 2007 movie based on a Jack Ketchum novel, which is probably under the heading of human horror, if anything, because it's pretty rough material. You have any idea what that's about?
The Girl Next Door?
Yeah, not the one, not the com or the kind of pseudo.
Well, that's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
No, this one is about a girl who gets raped and then like her dealing with abuse afterward because nobody believes her or they want her to shut up about it and stuff. So it's and then her and then what happens to her mentally as she goes through all of it. It's pretty rough stuff.
I have not seen it, so yeah.
I've technically not seen it, but I've heard of it. It's just one of those things where I don't really like movies about grapes, so I tend to avoid them. So I mean, that's probably why I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Kelly Maroney plays Samantha Belmont, which I love the fact they have last name Belmont. I don't know if that was chosen because of the Castlevania games, but kudos for, you know, using that name.
Yeah.
Typical Valley girl, cheerleader, teenage protagonist. Kelly Maroney's most known for being by horror fans for being in Chopping Mall. A lot of people might have seen her in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, where she also played a cheerleader, which is kind of why she was chosen for this movie. And she was in a horror movie at one point in time called Slayground.
So fucking cheesy.
Yeah, it was an early 80s movie, so you can imagine it was probably like trying to rip off of Halloween and, you know, all that early slasher craze.
Yeah.
Chopping Mall also, by the way, has the most badass poster that has nothing to do with the movie whatsoever. It's like a dead hand, like over a shopping bag that's like dripping blood, and it looks like a zombie hand or something. And the movie's about robots in a mall that are killing the people that are trapped inside. I don't know how the two relate, but it's what it's about.
I'm looking at it right now. I mean, probably because it's a bag. Obviously, you're going to go shopping. Oh, but the hand. Okay, so the hand I'm looking at looks like a robotic hand.
Oh, is it? Well, maybe that's where the tie-in is.
It's got wires coming out of it.
Okay, well, then that actually matches up with the movie a little bit more then.
Okay, yeah. So far, every poster I'm seeing is a robotic hand, which it doesn't look like it at first glance. It looks like a dead hand.
Yeah, maybe I just didn't focus on it that much, but yeah, that's what it is. Robert Beltran plays Hector Gomez, the truck-driving Lothario, just trying to survive and enjoy Christmas. He was also in Star Trek Voyager and a movie called Eating Raoul, and I'll bring that up in a second why that's important. Jeffrey Lewis plays Dr. Carter, the amoral scientist willing to sacrifice anyone just so that he can survive.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Lewis is one of those character actors. If you don't know his name, you've seen him in something.
You've seen him, yeah.
Salem's Lot, that was one of his more high-profile horror roles. He was also in The Devil's Rejects. And High Plains Drifter with, you know, Clint Eastwood. His daughter is Juliette Lewis.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess maybe there's some resemblance there, but I don't know. It's bare minimum if it is.
He's the doctor that had to put the glasses on during the interview, right? Yes. No, there's resemblance because I could see it's the shape, specifically the shape of their face.
Okay, yeah, maybe that's where it comes in at.
Because Juliette Lewis has a weird, long, square-looking face.
She does. She has kind of an odd shape.
And that's the only resemblance I could think of at the moment.
It might also explain why Juliette Lewis also has that, like, southern drawl to her, because he has a little bit of it in some of his roles.
Okay.
And then Mary Woronov plays Audrey White, who is the scientist who's slowly turning into a comet zombie, but she has a little bit of a heart and, you know, turns on the rest of the scientists. She was in Rock and Roll High School. I think she, if I'm remembering right, and I'm probably combining movies because I remember Rock and Roll High School forever way more because it had like Corey Feldman in it. But I want to say she might have played like the evil, almost like dominatrix, like principal in that movie or something, which kind of fits given her looks. She's got very chiseled features. I'll just say that. I mean, this woman does.
Mm-hmm.
She was also in Eating Raoul. That's why, the reason I brought up Robert Beltran being in that is because when they starred together in that, he recommended her for this movie when he started this movie up. And she was also in The Devil's Rejects with Jeffrey Lewis. So
lots of
they
rejects
had kind of a mini
this
reunion.
Yeah.
Synopsis. If you want to sum it up, it's Omega Man meets Valley Girl.
100%.
That's literally the movie.
Yes, 100%.
if you want more, then in the last days of the 20th century, a comet was passing within range of Earth that hadn't been in the solar system for 65 million years, around the time of the dinosaurs, folks. The people of Earth held massive parties to celebrate the once-in-a-lifetime event. Unfortunately, it would be the last thing many of them ever saw. Now, the handful of people that had better things to do with their night are left to fend for themselves and to fight a few homicidal comet zombies that want to kill, grape, and eat flesh. Reggie is trying the best her high scores. Samantha thinks Doris is a whore. Well, she is. And Hector is just trying to have a Feliz Navidad.
Shut the fuck up.
Other taglines. They came, they shopped, they saved the world.
No.
The comet's coming and the world will never be the same.
Okay. I mean, it works.
The last time it came, the dinosaurs disappeared.
I mean, that could be used for this movie and a porn.
That's what I was getting ready to
lots
say.
Of, lots mean, of come that came.
A lot of Ron Jeremy's movies. Mm-hmm. The last time he came, the dinosaurs disappeared.
Yeah.
Quotes, Regina Belmont, come on, Hector. The MAC-10 submachine gun was practically designed for housewives.
Which is fucking hilarious.
And then when her MAC-10 jams during target practice, Samantha... See, this is the problem with these things. Daddy would have gotten us Uzis.
Yeah, that was funny, too.
That was an ad-lib line, by the way. She came up with that on the spot. Dr. Carter, are you pregnant? And Regina's like, no, I thought I was once, though. And Dr. Carter's like, that's not important. And then Regina responds back, that's what you think. It was the longest 3 weeks of my life.
I mean, yeah. We've all been there, girly. Just girly things, you know?
Samantha, you were born with an asshole, Doris. You don't need Chuck. That's pretty good diss, actually. And then the zombie kid smashes his way through the door with his fist. Then Hector responds, geez, there goes the neighborhood.
Yeah, lots of racista comments in this film.
That's fine for a date night in the barrio.
Yes.
How did you feel about that line?
In the barrio. I was like, what the fuck? Easy white girl. Easy white chocolate.
in the interest of Pride Month, the F word is thrown out in this movie. Just saying.
Yeah, this movie definitely
It's of the '80s. It's for sure of the '80s.
Yeah.
Getting into this movie, this movie I did not know about for the longest time, and I only whenever I saw which I have as my background right now, which people can't see, but the original artwork for the Scream Factory release, I'm like, how have I never heard of a zombie movie set in the 80s called Night of the Comet? And when I seeked it out and watched it, and I'm like, I love this movie. I love the cheesy the way it starts, like even. It's got
the 80s music. I know you love that bullshit.
Well, it's got that, but it's got that announcer, like, you know, those classic, like, 50s movies. It's like, in a time at the end of the 80s or the 20th century, you know, like that whole startup to it or whatever. And then it's playing that music in the background that's almost like a sci-fi, you know, twinkle or whatever. Yeah. It's playing that. And then it starts up with the 80s music and it show like goes right to like her playing the arcade and the old El Rey theater. I was like, okay, I'm sold from the start. And then it just got better because the zombies... I think the design of the zombies is pretty good in this movie, considering the budget.
Yeah. The zombies definitely look good, but there wasn't a lot of them.
There's not a lot, but that's where they kind of save money on the budget. But yeah. The fact that they were smart zombies, like Omega Man.
Yes.
But they also had that dried, withered appearance, too. It kind of matched because they even say in the movie they're desiccating into the calcium dust. Is what they're, you know, very quickly, too.
And the dust is what's turning them into zombies.
Well, something about the comet being in the tail end of it is drying everything, drying them out because they were initially exposed to the first few flashes and now their bodies are just decaying from the inside out, I think is what they're implying. And the only thing that blocks it, and I just barely caught this last night whenever I was rewatching it again, because it's one of those movies I literally watched it for this again, and then I just cycled it back and started it right back up again and started playing it. But... she has a line, she says that steel, Regina says that steel must be the radiation or whatever that initially blasted them.
Yeah.
But the gist of the movie is if you were out watching the comic, then you turned instantly into the dust.
Yes.
If you were behind something that had a little bit of protection, you became a mindless zombie that's, or well, not really mindless. I mean, they yeah. can do some really bad shit, but you basically are you're on your deathbed, basically, yeah. and you're just going around killing and pillaging and all that. And then the scientists who were mostly blocked from it, but then fucked up and let some of the radiation in through the ventilation or whatever they did.
Yeah.
They're normal, but they're not. Like they're turning slower than anybody else is.
Yeah. Also they use the Z word in this movie.
They say zombies.
They
say it multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
Which is nice because they admit what they are,
yes.
you know, right from the get go. Because I think they even have that line from the younger girl, what's her name, Sabrina or Samantha? Samantha, she says, which is funny because I'll get to that in the trivia. This might have inspired a certain movie about a teenage vampire slayer.
Oh we'll my god, that. Never heard of her.
Yeah, but anyways, when she's talking on the radio, she says to all you teenage comet wasteland zombies or whatever she says. That when she says that line, that's what originally the movie was going to be titled until they changed it to Night of the Comet.
Okay. I thought when she was doing that, I was like, you better be careful because they're not mindless. And they
can find that radio yes. station. That's exactly what I thought. And I want to get into that. This movie actually succeeds on the horror side, even though it's there's not a lot of it in there because it implies a lot of threat.
Yeah.
It throughout the movie. Like anytime that they're there by themselves, you're waiting for something to happen to them.
Yes. So,
and them being at, and I thought the same thing when I was like, okay, you're waiting for those zombies to show up because they can come to that radio station.
Yeah, you dumb bitch. Which that radio station was badass. Radio stations don't look like that. They look like office buildings. This one was like decorated. The bathroom was decorated 80s. Like it was like, it looked like they took a nightclub and turned it into a radio station.
It's exactly what it looks like. But going back to the visuals of zombies, I think it's interesting because the zombies we had back at the time this came out were the wet zombies, you know, the Romero zombies, leaking yeah. stuff, you yeah. know, all that. These were dry zombies. And the way that they did their makeup is the way that the zombies look in The Walking Dead, which are dry zombies.
Yeah, okay.
It's so weird that they went back and like, okay, that's what we're going to do with our zombies, is that.
Yeah, I like it. Wet zombies are icky.
What did you think about that first zombie that appears, the one that's outside the theater?
She looked hella good. I mean, yeah, it's the best one. The kid looked kind of...
I like turtles. Yeah, he looked like the I Like Turtles kid.
Yes.
He did. The cops were freaky too. The funny thing about them is they don't exactly match the zombies in the rest of the movie. But what's interesting about that is the fact that they're in Samantha's dream.
Yes.
And she don't know what the zombies look like. So that's her interpretation of what they look like.
What I was thinking. And I was also, she's kind of turning into one, right?
You think that she is. That's the other thing they do in this movie. They set up the possible threat to the girls at any point in the movie, and then there's a point in the movie where she's digging and scratching at herself, and you're like, fuck, she's
yeah.
turning into one.
But it turns out that where
she keeps saying that she has, like, panic attacks and rashes, that's what it is.
Yeah, which makes sense. It was kind of a nice twist that doctor fake killed her.
Yes. And she was doing it to save her, too, because she didn't want her to go. She knew she couldn't get both of the girls out of it because they had already kind of, like,
yeah.
claimed the one. But the other one they had already kind of tagged as, like, oh, she might have been exposed. She's not worth our time. And the doctor was like, well, I'll just make it look like you died so that they leave you alone. You know?
Yeah.
That was pretty nice of her. And that scene, we're just skipping around all over the place. But that scene where she's there with her, or the glasses on herself,
yes.
in the radio station, and Hector comes in and she's just kind of like doped up and she's on the verge of going out herself. I really like that scene with that actress. I think she did a pretty good job of somebody
yeah.
who's like, you know, she's suicidal, but like she's, you know, she just accepted it too. You
exactly.
know, it's like,
well,
I'm,
that,
I'm
and
done.
She took the time to kind of write down what really happened, who, what, where, when, and why, so that he can accomplish what he needs to accomplish we kind of are able to pick up on that in the story, although I'll go into that detail a little bit later. And then she goes. And it reminded me of Resident Evil, because in Resident Evil, the first video game, when you're going around looking for clues, you come into the doctor's office and you get his diary of how he's slowly deteriorating.
Right, and it changes. Even the way he's writing mm-hmm. changes as you look at it, yeah.
Exactly.
And then they show that in the movie really well, because she's writing down, she sees accelerated on the screen from the computer saying that their blood samples are becoming more deteriorated at faster than they thought.
Mm-hmm.
And she tries writing down, and she's like, she's trying to log something in, and she's forgot her password, and she's like, shit. She's like, loss of memory is a sign.
Yes, so she spelled memory wrong.
And she misspells it. Yeah.
Yep. I was like, why? I go, you spelt it wrong. And I hadn't put two and two together at that point yet.
Yeah, I think that the little things they do in this movie like that are what makes the movie.
It helps. Yeah. Because there's a couple jump arounds that they do that doesn't kind of make sense. Something just happens. And they kind
Which
of
ones
just
are you talking about? And we'll go through them.
God, I can't think of the top of my head right now. Because one of them was when, one of them would have been where the cheerleader comes back. But then I had to think about it. I had to be like, wait a second. That doctor wrote down some shit. So she probably wrote down
where she was at.
Yeah, how did he find her? It just, all of a sudden he shows up and she's in the back of his trunk. And I'm like, wait a second. You didn't even know where she was? Oh, fuck. But it was similar to kind of that, where something just happened and it's like, there's no explanation.
He actually has a line in the movie, though, where he said that she left directions for him.
Yes, yes, yes. And he did say, yes.
So, I mean, she could have written down that the girl wasn't dead, you know, that she just, you know, he even says the line. It's like, you didn't kill her. You just gave her sodium pentothal and made it, yes. you know, and made it look like she was dead.
Well, he so said that to the guy. He's like, oh, well, the doctor here gave her, or the doctor that sent me here put sodium such and such in her to make her think make everyone think she was dead.
Yeah. So they do explain it in the sense that now, would it have been better if they'd maybe added a scene like to kind of show him picking her up?
Yeah.
And maybe even in the process added in another little scene where he had to, like, you know, possibly rescue her from other zombies or whatever. Yeah. That would have been cool, but they were running, I mean, they massive running a budget issues in this movie. So
it's not that they didn't tell the story. The story is told. It's just that the way they skip to it can be easily missed.
Yeah, you have to be paying, like, even the steal scene, like, I missed that again until last night when and she says it really quick when she's in the bathroom talking to Hector, or like, mentioning it. She's like, when she asked Hector where he was at, and he said he was in the back of a pickup truck, and she rattles off where they was at, and she's like, steal. The steel is what protected us, you know? And like,
yeah.
I totally missed that the first time through, because it was just blinking, you miss, and it's gone out of the movie, you know?
Exactly.
Were
we in visual still? We
jumped all over, but visually, I was going to get back to the red sky.
The red sky was amazing. Do you have in trivia how that was accomplished?
I don't know if they even said that in trivia how it was accomplished. The only thing I can think of is that maybe they just applied like a color grade to the movie, like,
yeah,
you know,
because there was one point
was processed.
There was one point where I was like, well, she's driving off in the distance and it's probably just a huge backdrop that she's driving towards. But the problem is that it's such a wide shot and her car is so small. The car that's driving, is the car or motorcycle? I don't know which one. But
she's on a motorcycle most of the movie.
Yeah.
She is driving a car at one point after she picks Samantha, but she's driving a motorcycle for a good chunk.
Okay. And it's just going off towards the red sky, and I'm like, oh, that's got to be a backdrop. But then I'm thinking, that's huge-ass backdrop to be for this wide angle, you know, that they're filming. And I was like, either it's a filter or I have no idea what they did to make that happen, but it looked amazing.
Yeah, and then it makes it even better with the red dust of the people that's left, too. It kind of, you know, complements that look, you know. And then at the end of the movie, whenever the rain is washing away, you know, everything and the skies turn back the regular blue, it's, you know, like, it's it's pretty, you know, pretty neat effect. It's like cleansing, you know, everything whenever it's falling, you know, the rain is, and kind of getting rid of all that. But
yeah.
I'm trying to think other visually. I mean, those are the two primary things they do. Otherwise, they the biggest thing they did visually was create a, I mean, what looked like an empty LA, and that's visually.
Oh yeah.
For the budget, they did a damn good job with that because it the world feels empty in this movie. Like
if you are in New York or LA and the streets look like that, run for cover.
You're in the apocalypse.
You are. There is no way. I was like, 6 o'clock in the morning. There is really no time you can escape LA traffic, which is insane. I think late night. I think like between 8 and 9 o'clock at night. That's not late night, but like you can kind of get by with less traffic at those hours, and you can actually just cruise down the fucking highway. But. Yeah. Like, if you want to, if I want to get somewhere, like, where I reside for, you know, when I'm going to Universal, it probably should be a half an hour drive tops, honestly. 20 minutes, realistically. It's not that far. But because of LA traffic, it can take anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half to get to. Even if you leave at, like, 6 o'clock in the morning. It's insane. Just, LA traffic blows balls, so this apocalypse would definitely be welcomed.
just the feeling that they made it like the world's empty in this movie is like the biggest, like, I mean, it's got that adds to the creep factor too to me, because you're sitting there and it's just so eerie that everything's so empty around them.
That and that that radio station was badass. The visuals, the neon lights, everything that they had, it looked really good.
Yeah, it did. I'm trying to think of anything else visually, but those are the main things that stood out to me.
Yeah, the monsters, the lighting of the outside world, the money they put into making this. This is the epitome of 80s. Visuals, a lot of money was put into visuals.
And also, well, this should be brought up because I think it's in the trivia. They made the girls have outfits that were like very bright in colors, so they stood out more to everything else around them. Yeah. Which is a visually an interesting thing. I was going to ask you, what do you think about having the two Valley Girl-like characters as the main stars? Like, I mean, it's not traditional in any film of this time, and really not that big of a... I mean, it's more so now because they put girl bosses and everything, but it was a pretty big change for the time period.
Well, considering the Valley Girl doesn't really exist anymore, there's the versions of it. But that was the California rich girl back in the day.
Yeah.
I think it suits perfectly fine. And I also think it works really well because Daddy was big in the military. He was also big on training his daughters, which we do get pieces of that story, which is why they are trained in weapons. You know, they know enough about them. But when you live, when you do that for a living, you can provide them the lifestyle that they have. So they lived in a nice house in a nice neighborhood, which is going to give them that personality that they had. Now, the oldest one was a little more down to earth. I think she didn't always live that way, whereas the younger one always lived like that.
And she kind of gives that vibe in some of the stuff she says about how their childhood went, too. That her sister didn't really see as much of the change as she did or whatever in the family.
Yes. So I think it worked out really good. I think that could even still work for today. You would get a different type of quotation mark Valley Girl, but let's just call it a California girl is what it is.
So here's my other question following that up. As somebody who's watched this movie that's for the first time, I would assume. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like these girls earned their ability to be able to fight as well as they did, and given what happens to them in the movie, do you feel like it's appropriate for their like level of both their like body builds and like their ability to get out of stuff of how things progress or whatever?
I think so, because they struggled. It wasn't a clean, easy fight every time. She had to throw that zombie off of her 4 or 5 times.
And not the thing that cemented at me was the creepy zombie that was in the mall, the one that was like, you know, you dirty rat, you know.
Oh, yes.
He he captures them. They, yes. If it wasn't for the military people, the scientists showing up, they'd be dead.
Yes.
Like, straight up. And this is something contrasted against, I was thinking when I was watching, I couldn't help but do it because Acolyte and everything else going on right now. Hector helps or saves the women. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't see that in modern movies. They refuse to have a man help a woman in modern movies.
Exactly.
And they don't make Hector weak at all in this movie. Mm-mm. He's the traditional, good guy hero in the movie. Like, he doesn't, kowtow to the women. He respects Regina's, skills, but he's still willing to step up and be the man,
Yeah. I think they made everyone appropriate for who they are, what they are. Like, the girls, obviously, they might have training, but they're still small women at the end of the day that don't lift and don't make that their life. So you can only do so much. The good thing about being small like they are is they can kind of squirm and wiggle their way out of a situation potentially, like when she kind of wiggled out of the zombie's arms at the beginning, the one by the theater.
Yeah.
She was able to escape because she was able to slip through and do a blow, but even her blows weren't doing too much. They weren't doing nothing, but they
were disrupting him, mm-hmm. but they weren't putting him down.
Exactly. So I think it was appropriate. Now, what was even more appropriate is that someone that size would need a gun to protect herself.
And them saying they were trained in the use of guns both makes sense, mm-hmm. given the background of their dad.
Yes.
And B is the exact thing that levels the playing field.
Exactly. I mean, that
they will not recognize in modern movies because guns bad, whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know why this is not a bigger thing, but feminists should get behind, the Second Amendment, because guns are the ultimate leveling between men and women, as far as, like, if you don't want to have any issues with a terrible man, the gun will take care of the issue.
Yeah, and which was, I thought was really good. If we're talking about the girls and, how they are and whatnot, they're technically both teenagers. I'm going to guess that Regina was like 19,
She says 18 in the movie, but you could tell the actress was older than that.
Yes, for sure. Actually, so. And then Samantha, 16-ish, maybe 17.
That's kind of what they were hitting at. And Kelly Maroney, I don't know her exact age when she filmed this, but she had a youthful enough look that she pulled mm-hmm. that off, I feel like.
I think it worked when she is in, when they're in the mall or when they're shopping or whatnot, and she doesn't have her weapon. She doesn't know where it's at. Either it went missing, the guys grabbed it or whatnot, and she had to resort to ducking and throwing shoes.
Because, which makes sense mm-hmm. for her, what she would be used to doing to get somebody away yes, from her.
Exactly. So I think they were very appropriate with how they handled the women, and how they would have to survive.
And yes, and I'll say one thing at the end of it. Now, it might be a little bit of a stretch that there was that whole military complex with guns and soldiers and all that, but they kind of showed that complex didn't have a lot of people, first of all.
Yes, that is correct.
Secondly, the scientists were the main people, and they're not skilled in fighting.
No,
And that's how Regina got away, was that she got one of the dorky scientists, kicked mm-hmm. him in the nuts, basically, and got away from him. Actually shoot him over the head with something to knock him down, which makes sense.
Yes.
One of the things though that I noticed whenever I was watching this last night though, that I hadn't thought about in a long time. I don't know if it's to me, I kind of cheer for him whenever I see this, but at the same time, I just wonder about like how much of a hero moment it is. Because the two bitches are clearly evil. The two women that are trying to draw the blood from the little girl and the little boy.
Yes.
But Regina straight up at gunpoint forces them to basically go under a chemical lobotomy. Yes. I cheered, but then I was like, that's badass. But that also, our heroine's willing to do anything it takes.
Well, she was about to hurt those little children. I'd fuck them up.
Yeah, exactly. They're, yeah.
That was the friendlier version. I mean, well, I guess ending their life would have been a lot friendlier, possibly.
The ending their life with a gun would have been friendlier than what she did. That's what I'm saying. It's a little over the line, but I like it. I like what she did.
Jesus. I would do a little Saving Private Ryan and slowly stabbed him in the heart while I tell him to shh.
Well, speaking of that, what were your thoughts? Because, like, it's been so long that I had forgotten. I actually was enjoying, like, living through the movie without knowing unlike Army of Darkness, I've seen so many times. It's just, you know, but, like, this one, I was just like, okay, I was in it because it had been forever since I watched it. Slowly realizing just how evil those scientists were. What were your thoughts on that? Like, when you realized what they were doing.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of, I was like, I was excited that they were going to come find them. I was like, oh, good, they're going to save them. And then I was like, oh no, this is not good at all. Like, this is not.
The ultimate moment for me was whenever they had the guy there on the table, mm-hmm, hooked up to the machine, and they were bragging about how, since they were brain dead, they could pull more blood from him than they could if he was moving about.
Which, why were they taking blood from them?
They were trying to use their normal blood to synthesize a cure for the wasting that they had going on.
Okay, which makes sense.
The female scientists realized that that was a useless endeavor because that they were going to be dead way before they ever had a chance to find a cure.
They're giggling about it, but yet they're still doing their job, quotation mark, you know. But because you never once see them drinking the blood or taking it through, an infusion, if you will. Nothing.
No, yeah, it was assumed that they were just taking it and spinning it off, trying to find some way to isolate, like, something from the blood that would protect them. But, I mean, I don't even know if that would have helped them, because given the fact that it was radiation exposure, like, what would the normal... unless they were taking infusions, but even then, it wasn't slowing the effects for them at all. Which I don't know. The more it went along, I was like, these scientists are every bit as evil as the military guys were in 28 Days Later, if not more so.
Yeah.
Because at least the guys in 28 Days Later, they had a code about them, even if it was twisted. And it's like, well, we're going to repopulate the world no matter what it takes.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, these scientists were like, fuck everybody else in the world. We're going to take care of ourselves. I mean, it's a small difference, but it I think they're worse for what they're trying to do.
Oh my God. I just thought of something so fucking like dumb, but like, do you think in 28 Days Later, so stupid. I don't know why I'm thinking about this. Do you think any of those guys would have like gotten possessive over whose kid it was that the girls were pregnant with? Or even when the babies came out, when they, like, you can physically see, oh, that's...
They would have had bragging about it, and it's like, clearly that's my kid because it's doing this, that, or the other. Yeah. Trying to say that they were the one actively... they would have definitely, because they're guys, and it would have been competition.
That's what I was thinking, is they're guys, and mine was the strongest sperm, even though all of us had up in her.
One other thing about that main scientist, Jeffrey Lewis's character.
Yeah.
He, Dr. Carter, I think it was pretty creepy, that scene right before he turned the ignition to blow himself up. Like, I thought he was going to rip into that other guy's throat for a second, like the way that he was hissing.
Oh, yeah.
He just had that traditional zombie look about him. He's just like, but he still talked. I mean, that's the thing about the zombies in this movie. They still have speech, which is, I mean, there's another movie we're going to be covering in July that's that way. But, I mean, it's always kind of creepy when the zombies can speak. Because, I mean,
especially that other one. The first one was like, come here. And I was like, no, fuck you. You stay over there. Like a good neighbor, stay over there.
And then the creepiest one in the whole movie is that guy that's in the mall. Because, I mean, he's got that one line. He's like, I'm not crazy. I just don't give a fuck. Like that whole.
I mean, you're wasting away. What are you going to do?
Exactly. And Hector, whenever he's talking about how the girl he's with, like, gets, which is a good little bit of storytelling and world building too in the movie, talks about how she ran away from him. He basically implies that they're eating any living thing they can get their hands on.
Blech. Poor kitty and cat. We lost a cat in this movie.
Yeah. Well, we also lost Muffy, was it? Or Miffy or something?
Miffy or Muffy. Yeah, I forget.
Yeah. Yeah, the dog that was turned in the dust.
Which is so funny because her leash was just right inside, like, the doorway, so she didn't see the comet. So what happened?
It got to you as long as you didn't have steel protecting you is the implication of the movie.
Okay, never mind. I thought you had to physically see it.
And the assumption is if you were, like, deep inside of, like, a building that had, like, some steel, like, girders or something, mm-hmm. you got a slant of it, and you would have been one of the zombies, basically.
Yeah. Okay.
I think... I don't know. In this world, this would be the best zombie apocalypse to find yourself in as a survivor, because you wait a few days and they're all gone, and then you got the world, you know, to as your oyster. But I don't. It's also the world where you're most likely going to be dead if you were in it before, as the apocalypse is happening. Because how many people are going to be in a situation where they're surrounded by enough steel to protect against that?
Yeah, exactly. Especially with these way the shitty houses are built now.
Yeah, especially like newer constructs. There's no way. The music in the movie too is like something to bring up. I mean, these are all like every song in this movie is like a knockoff of something that's like a real song. Like there's one song in this movie that sounds like the Police's "I'll Be Watching You." It's got the same beat, but it's not. The song's nothing like that.
So they did an exact replica of Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
With another voice actress, yes or another singer.
Yeah, and I was like, why not? You had to pay Cyndi Lauper for that song. So why not just use her version of it?
So I don't know if they had to pay her or if they had to pay the studio. And if they paid the studio but had somebody else sing it, then there was probably a reduction in the price. And that's probably why they got it that way.
Hold on, let me see.
That song that plays the beginning of our podcast and also the movie or whatever, that's like, you know, that song is completely original to the movie. Apparently there was a lot of songs in this movie that are completely original. That sounded vaguely 80s enough to where they just work. Cause that's one thing I'll give this movie. A lot of people love the soundtrack, and it does. It puts you in the vibe of it being in the '80s because it's a mix of genres, and it's also 80s enough in all the ways that matter to make you think that it came from that time period.
Yeah. So the song Girls Just Want to Have Fun was sang by Tammy Holbrook, which is not in the film, but yeah, it was definitely not Cyndi Lauper. Huh. This is all fucking interesting.
Yeah, it was. It's they pulled a Romero in the sense that they went to, licensed music, but they went just enough licensed to where it sounds like it could be licensed music.
Yeah. I don't like it.
It's, what was it? Something in stereo, but like the knockoff version. Moving in stereo.
Oh God, that was so funny. That is so funny that I caught that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same exact scenario.
Oh my God.
What do you think about the acting in the movie? I think the girls do a good job of selling Valley Girls, basically.
The girls and what's his name? Why am I not thinking of his name? The Mexican.
Hector.
Even though she says it hella funny. She's like, Hector.
Hector, yes.
Hector. They do fine.
I also like the fact he's a country music, you know.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of those. Country music Mexicans. Because it very much resembles the kind of music that we have. A little more flavor in ours sometimes, but you know, yeah, Mexicans enjoy a good music. I'm saltine American.
Us saltines don't like it too spicy. Come on now.
No, but anyways, and then the hot doctor, you know, the one that offs herself, she was great. Everyone else was just kind of just there, you know.
Jeffrey Lewis. I mean, the kids, they're kids. They're not. Yeah. They're never gonna be. I mean, you've one in a million shot that you're gonna have a good kid actor.
They're literally just so happy to be there.
Yeah, they were. Jeffrey Lewis was a good actor as far as the just being that, you know, evil fucking, mm-hmm. you know, like that's the one you need to focus on as being the asshole, you know, villain in the movie. But he plays a character. He's a character actor. He plays that kind of part all the time. Doris, she's not in the movie very long, but do you think that she stood out as far as like being enough of a bitch to get her point across?
Yeah.
Like I was surprised they actually had her punch Samantha at the beginning of it.
That was so funny. I mean,
The slaps were okay. You expect that. That's kind of like a, you know, 80s soap opera thing, but her just outright belting her in the face. Yeah. I'm like, okay.
She was out to get some dick and ain't no bitch going to get in her way.
No, she's going to get Chuck or whatever his name is. Yeah. She's going to get some of that.
She had 99 problems and a bitch wasn't one, you know? The acting was okay, but yeah, the main characters was where it was at. Sometimes you don't always have that. Sometimes you have great parts from other side characters. And yeah, what's his name? The main doctor. Yeah, he was good too, but still didn't stand out as much as the girls did.
No, not even the female scientist. She clearly was, mm-hmm. you know, like, I mean, that scene with her and Hector was great.
Yes.
Like, I mean, she really sold that. This movie really lives and dies on the two main actresses, because they didn't sell their part, then the whole movie would fell apart right from the get go. Because I mean, that's you're following them throughout the entire movie, anyways.
Yeah.
So I mean, they chose right in getting who they did.
Definitely.
Anything else you want to talk about the movie before we get? I mean, because we'll cover our view, like our actual rating at the end. But I've got some trivia here.
No, let's roll into the trivia.
Kelly Maroney improvised the Uzi line, like I said, when the weapon jammed for real. Director Tom Ebert told the cast to react to any unexpected occurrences in character, since time and budget were so tight they needed to avoid retakes.
Were they shooting actual fucking, like, guns?
At least ones were firing blanks that were firing that way, yeah.
Okay. That's funny.
I think it's great, because, you know, we talk about all the time that sometimes a tight budget will cause you to be more creative. That line's one of the best ones in the movie, and, like, she came up with it because of the budget constraints.
Yeah.
When cheerleader Samantha Belmont is playing at the radio station as a disc jockey, she says she is taking requests from all you Teenage Mutant Comet Zombies, which was the working title of the film.
Which is hilarious. And also, she was going to get a request from them in person if she didn't fucking watch her shit.
Well, I thought that's what the phone call was whenever I forgot that it was the scientist.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, some zombies are calling her right now. She's fucked.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, don't pick it up. They're going to know you're real. Because at least if, like, well, she had said zombies technically, but, like, I don't know. I was like, there's a chance that it might not be a real person and they're calling to check, you know?
Mm. Yeah, but that one guy, which the guy at the mall would have responded to that, but remember, he hated the radio
because
actually had one of his goons, like, blow it up. He said, get rid of that shit, you know?
Oh, my God. Maybe they don't like music. Maybe smooth jazz doesn't actually make them feel good.
Well, they weren't playing smooth jazz, so maybe that would have helped, mm-hmm. you know?
That's true.
Because you got to imagine, those zombies feel like shit. And that's one thing that I don't know if you noticed. Doris, it kind of gives a hint at how the comet is affecting people right before she dies, because she starts scratching herself, and then she, like, holds her hands up to her eyes like they're burning or whatever,
yeah.
and then she's gone.
So, I beg to differ. They did play smooth jazz at one point in this film, because I had immediately thought of Life After Beth.
Well, it was a jazzy song, but they didn't play it in the mall. They
definitely not the mall. So,
and just watching this movie, I think of the zombies as having, like, a major hangover, because that's what dehydrated with a hangover.
That makes sense.
I mean, that's why they're wearing the sunglasses, because the light hurts their eyes. They've probably got throbbing headaches that won't go away. It's probably miserable going out. The scenes of an empty Los Angeles were filmed in the morning on normal business days. The shots of the barren city were done quickly while the traffic was held up at stoplights.
Oh, okay, that makes sense, because I'm like, there's no fucking way.
And the two police officers who were seen riding motorcycles in Samantha's nightmare were actually location cops who were the ones helping stop traffic so they could film the movie.
Wow. Lucky.
The movie theater featured in the beginning of the movie is the historic El Rey Theater that's in Los Angeles.
I recognized it for sure.
Chance Boyer, who plays the little boy survivor Brian, is the real-life son of actress Sharon Farrell, who was the one that played Doris.
Oh, okay.
So, when Samantha is arguing with her stepmother Doris in the beginning, actress Sharon Farrell actually slapped Kelly Maroney for real because Maroney felt like she wasn't getting the right reaction to Farrell's fake slaps, and said, due to budget constraints, we can't keep doing this. Just slap me for real and let me respond to it. So that's she's really getting slapped.
So was her response slap real?
It didn't say that. It just said that her slap. Damn. Because she wouldn't, you know. Kelly Maroney did keep one of the two cheerleader outfits that she wore in the movie. So
I mean, they were cute, that. So why not? I mean, that sweater cost $80, so.
I laughed when she said that. I'm like, you know what? Money's not really, I mean, on some things, has not changed a whole lot since the early 80s, because, I mean, that's probably right for a high-end sweater, if that's what you're going for.
Well, I don't think it was a high-end sweater. I think it was part of the cheer uniform. And cheer uniforms are fucking expensive.
They are expensive, yeah.
Yeah.
Writer-director Tom Ebert's car can be seen at the stoplight. You know, that one that they keep driving or they keep showing or whatever that's playing the Christmas music? Yes. That's the director's car, that's which so is funny because that's what Sam Raimi does. He puts his car in his movie. So the album Samantha tosses over, and that car is actually pretty nice. Like, if you, when it zooms in on it, especially in like the 4K version, I'm like, that's a swanky car for the 80s. Oh, like, I mean, the album Samantha tosses over her shoulder in the soundtrack is the soundtrack for Valley Girl, which was briefly one of the most sought after albums in the 80s.
That's so funny.
So when she's like sorting through the albums and she just throws one of them, she throws Valley Girl away.
Blasphemy.
Since it was clearly one of the inspirations for the movie. The photos of Hector's family are actual pictures of various family members of writer-director Tom Ebert's wife. So I wonder, is his wife a Latina? Because those look like Mexican family.
Yeah. It has to be, because I was thinking that too. I was like, oh, look at Abuelita. And then I saw a younger Latina woman, and I was like, who's that? Is that his mom? Was the other one his actual grandma, and that's his mom? Okay.
Maybe that's why he put a Hispanic guy in the movie to kind of, you know, like,
homage to his wife.
Flavor. Yeah.
Honey, I like brown people, just like I like you.
I'm not just one of those saltines, you know. Robert Beltran recommended Mary Warrenov for the role of Audrey, as I said. You know, they worked together on Eating Raoul.
Yeah.
Catherine Mary Stewart played Regina, did most of her own stunts except for riding the motorcycle. The long shots were a stunt woman, while the close-ups were done by putting her on a motorcycle, which was on a flatbed truck that was then pulled, you know, moved forward.
Oh, my God.
While she was sitting stationary.
That is so funny.
What would you think about the fact that, I don't know if you caught this, you know how she's got that beef at the beginning of the movie because DMK took the sixth spot on her Tempest machine?
Yeah.
Did you notice who the guy was that picked up her sister at the end of the movie?
I saw DMK on the license plate.
Yeah. It was the guy, the one guy that she was bitching about, you know, at the beginning of the movie. It's the one that picked up her sister.
Exactly. And I'm like, okay, did he survive because he's good at video games?
I just thought it was hilarious. I was like, that's a good callback, you know, to work it back in.
Exactly.
While writing the screenplay, Tom Ebert asked teenagers for their input on what they would do if they survived the end of the world.
Not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea at all, because you're going to get all kinds of things. You're going to get shit that would work. You're going to get shit that doesn't work. Mostly stuff that doesn't work.
But, I mean, teenagers would be stupid, and they'd probably die in the early parts of the apocalypse, so that makes sense. The production designer, John Muto, used what he describes as a comic book sensibility for the film's overall look. The characters were given specific colors, with the bad guys in blue and grays and the sisters in brighter colors. Regina's colors were deeper than Samantha's to reflect that she was more intellectual than Samantha, and Samantha was wackier than Regina. For example, Samantha's cheerleading outfit is magenta and turquoise.
Yeah, and at one point it looked like they were both in turquoise when they were up at the top shooting.
Yeah.
They're fighting over the last man on Earth.
Fighting over Hector?
Yeah. Like, let's be honest, did you even like Mexicans before you found out he's the last one? Be real right now.
You got to settle for what you can get. That is true. You know, apocalypse is, you can't be choosy. I did like the fact that scene with them fighting and like they just kind of laugh it off. I was like, okay, that seems like what sisters would do. You know? Like they
realize we're going to fucking die and here we are fighting over a guy that's not even physically here with us right now. And who knows if he's even coming back.
And he's either a gentleman or a, you know what, because he didn't sleep with Regina right off the bat.
Which is, wow, yeah. He didn't hit on you, like, wow. give it some time. Like, literally, the world, he doesn't even know if his family's alive.
Yeah, he's not like you all. He doesn't know that everything's gone like you do.
He fucking saw his girlfriend get ripped apart by some cannibalistic thing. He's going to have a hard time getting that dick up. Chill.
Mary Warrenov initially doubted the film would have any longevity, saying in 1986 that it is, quote, not a cult movie at all. It's a fad movie. She went on to explain that the film will date very quickly because it's about Valley Girls shopping at the mall and the bomb. It's not ahead of its time. It's not behind its time. It's just a combination of N elements. She's clearly wrong because the 80s nostalgia is so high in this movie that a lot of people love it for that fact, if nothing else.
Definitely. The 80s, man, it just really stuck with people.
I was telling this to Cody. I was like, for most people, myself included, the 80s were just basically like the late 70s. You know, it was wood paneled walls and like shag carpet. We didn't have all the fancy lights like they had in that, the radio station.
Yeah.
The neon and all that.
Oh, yeah, no.
I mean, most places didn't even get that feel to it until like the late 80s. And, you know, I was surprised this was so early in the 80s. I'm like, man, they the 80s aesthetic right off the bat with this one, you know?
Yeah. It's because they had money, and you needed money to have that kind of look, you know?
Yeah. It was only in the rich cities where they had that kind of look, too.
Yeah.
The radio station was built in an abandoned warehouse.
Oh.
As Regina emerges from the movie theater the morning after the comet, a poster for Death Race 2000 from 1975 can be seen on the theater door. Mary Warrenov, the female scientist, actually was in that movie as well.
Oh, hella cool.
Mary Warrenov wrote most of her dialogue in her scene with the radio station with Robert Beltran, so all that stuff was her that she was saying pretty much.
Goddamn.
Joss Whedon has cited this film as a big influence for his original script for Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Wow.
Which makes sense, because think of Buffy as a character. She's just a 90s version of the Valley Girl, basically.
Yeah.
Robert Beltran initially turned down the role of Hector Gomez because he did not want to play Hector as a typical cholo type. Director, I didn't get cholo from him in this.
Not at all.
If anything, I got like off white, you know, cowboy. You know, that's what I got from him.
You got Whitesican.
Yeah, Whitesican. Yeah. Director Tom Ebert recalls receiving praise for his creative decision to pick Kelly Maroney's character walking out of an elevator by focusing on her feet instead of the conventional full body or upper body shot. But the main reason he did it that he told later the Projection Booth podcast was because they were running out of time. She was already unavailable for pickups, and they just got a production team member to wear the character's sneakers and just had a couple of people off screen pull doors apart to simulate an elevator and, you know, film her feet as she left so that it looked like, you know, that's what they were doing.
Oh, my God, that's hella funny.
So he got praised for this scene, saying, well, that's like the most, you know, non-misogynistic thing that anybody's ever done with an attractive female. And he's like, well, it's because of money, you know?
Yeah.
Tempest by Atari is the game that Regina's playing in the movie theater. The think tank base was done with miniatures and forced perspective, which you can kind of tell because they keep showing that one military soldier up top, you know, watching over it. But it's like a small miniature that they're kind of, showing.
That's hella funny.
Like many horror films of the 70s and 80s, example, Dawn of the Dead, this film has several critiques of consumer culture contained within the plot and dialogue. The best example of this is whenever the think tank is looking for Regina and Samantha, and they're like, where would we be at if we were teenage girls? And then they thought of the shopping mall as being, you know, the place that they would go to, because they said that the
Comfort
shopping arcade was an absolute monument to consumerism.
Oh, yeah.
The waving clown in the first desolate shots of downtown Los Angeles is the same exact clown that Pee-wee Herman locks his bike to in Pee-wee's Big Adventure and subsequently gets his bike stolen. Heather Langenkamp, a.k.a. Nancy, auditioned for the role of Samantha but didn't get it.
Wow, that would have been interesting.
She, at this point in time, I mean, I think we can all admit Heather Langenkamp was the strongest actress.
Yes.
I think that the one that they got for, I think that whenever they got And also, it was for Samantha. It wasn't for Regina. So do you think that she would have pulled off the cheerleader?
No.
I think Kelly Maroney did a much better job in playing that.
She would have had to play Reggie.
Yeah. And Kelly Maroney was chosen because of her Fast Times at Ridgemont High character being a cheerleader. During the crowd scenes at the beginning, there's a brief shot of LL Cool J on a microphone.
What?
Yeah, all those scenes at the beginning, LL Cool J's in the background.
I did not know. Way.
When Regina is trying to convince Samantha that everyone is dead, she says, "It's Saturday morning. Where are all the kids?" So the comet passed on Friday night, and the radio station recording mentions that there are 11 more shopping days till Christmas. If you count the 24th as the last shopping day, that means the comet passed on December 14th of that year. That's the day that everything takes place.
So it wasn't Friday the 13th.
No, it was Friday the 14th. Unfortunately. Ah,
boo.
Everybody was gone before Christmas. Bummer. Hector Gomez was originally supposed to have a major emotional breakdown when he went back to his family's house.
I was expecting that.
I don't know if it's better or worse that he didn't, because I don't think they would have drugged the movie down at that scene.
Yes.
Like, you know, having it focus on him.
I was kind of hoping to see his mom or grandma fucking dead and attack him. That would have been awesome.
One of them is a zombie. That would have been pretty good.
Yeah. Instead, we got that kid. So whatever. I like turtles.
I like toidles. That's what, if you did like a cut of this and you had that play as soon as that kid's face showed up, it would be perfect.
That would be so fucking funny.
The main female character, Regina, is an expert video game player. Stewart also starred in another film the same year as this one, The Last Starfighter, which the main protagonist is also an expert video game player. When the girls first encounter Hector at the radio station, Samantha explains, "Beam me up, Scotty." Robert Beltran later goes on to play Chakotay on Star Trek Voyager in 1995.
Look at that.
And when Regina and Larry spend the night at the theater in the projection booth, a movie is playing. Guess what movie it is?
Because it's the front door.
Night of the Living Dead from 1968, because there's no copyright.
Question. So the guy in that, you know, the Larry, that cheap ass, the one who was going to pay Regina $15 for her fucking fine vagina.
By the way, yeah, paying her 15. Well, actually, he tells her, he's like, "If we were doing that, you'd get a lot more money. Because you're worth more than that." And she just gives him that eye roll or whatever.
Yeah.
Actually, I like a lot of the side lines that she gives him that he never picks up on or whatever. Yes. You know, like, you know, she's giving him shade and he never realizes it.
She still sleeps with him.
He gave me knockoff Marty McFly vibes in that scene where he's like on the phone, you know, because he's got the suspenders. He's dressed like Michael J. Fox from Back to the Future a little bit.
Yeah.
In that scene.
I didn't pay that much attention. I just, the one thing I caught on to was how he had this black market cut of a movie that was,
it comes from outer space.
Yeah. A comet zombie movie.
Yeah, well, yes, basically something like that.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty funny.
And the even funnier thing was is that he was arguing with a guy over literally $10, because the guy's offering him $100. He's like, and he knocks the phone down. He's like, "Is this phone malfunctioning? $100 for a 3D cut of a movie, you know, blah, blah, blah." And the guy offers him $110. He's like, "Now we're talking." I'm like,
"Oh my God.
$10 fucking dollars. Like, what the hell, dude?"
Okay, but what could $10 get you in the 80s?
Apparently it could get you Regina, so, or close to it.
Close to, yeah. Maybe she'll show him her boobs. Holy crap. Wait a second. I'd show my boobs for $10 back in the day. I mean, I haven't, but fuck, I should have. They were nice.
Hey, some people are selling that for $5 a month. Yes. Now, so,
I mean, my God. I saw a meme the other day, speaking of that, and, some girl like posted a TikTok about how like this guy took her out to dinner and I forget what restaurant it was. And she's like, "You think I'm worth $60 or something like that?" And then it like shows a side screen of her OnlyFans and it was like $15 a month or something, 10 or 15 a month. And it's like,
yeah,
girl.
Which, speaking of that, this is a total tangent, but this one that somebody shared with me, this TikTok, of this guy, and he's like really taking care of this girl during like their dinner together. Like she leans over to grab something on the edge of the table. He puts his hand around the, you know, the sharp edge of the table, so when she comes back up, she won't hurt herself on it. And he like, you know, was feeding her food and all that. And then at the very end of it, somebody hands him the check and he passes it directly over to her.
Hell yeah. he paid his dues. Okay.
He did what he was supposed to do during the whole thing.
So fucking funny. I like to pay for the bill when I go on dates with my husband. I just grab our ATM card and, babe, I got this. And, you know, because you got to treat him like the queen that he is, you know?
Yeah, make him feel like I'm sure that it's a shared banking account.
That is neither here nor there, Reverend, okay? We're not talking about that. We're talking about how I'm treating my husband the way he deserves to be treated.
Well, going back to the movie, Larry is clearly such a provider for Regina.
Oh God.
Again, I love every line she gives him back in Shade. They're small, but if you listen, they're hilarious. He says something like, well, he's like, he said you should be mad at him, you know, or whatever. And she's like, yeah, like last night was anything to be happy about, you know, or whatever she says. And I'm like, you go, girl, you get him over that.
It would have been funnier if she still hadn't fucked him, because it was implied that they fucked, right?
Yeah, well, because there's one scene where they're laying there as right as the comet's getting ready to show up, and it shows like a shot of the radio that's nearby, and like he kind of pokes her with something. We can assume what it is, and she's like, "Larry," you know, like she's giggling when he does it or whatever, and it's pretty much assumed what they did.
You can talk all the shit that you want to, but girl, you're still letting him stick it in you.
The best line in the movie is the theater director, Mel. Because he has this line, and I love it. He said, and speaking of Larry, he said, that guy's doing to me what he's been doing to her in the projection booth. You know, basically saying that he's been fucking him over. It's such a good line. It's so good. And the guy delivers it so well. I'm like, all right, that's pretty good.
Oh, my God. No way.
Final thoughts on this movie. I'm going to go ahead because it's my movie, and we'll do that on yours. You can be the first one to review it. Woo. So, of course, I'm not going to give it a 5. It's not a 5.
I'm surprised.
There's a lot of problems with it. It is a 4.5, though. If I was rating the movie as far as, like, you know, how well it was made, everything taken together, it's probably a 4. It gets the extra 0.5 because I love this fucking movie. Like, I can literally just sit here and watch this movie and be happy. We'll just like Army of Darkness, just like throw it on, just watch it. I mean, I the music, the visuals, the red and all that, the 80s vibe to it, the way that the zombies are, the actual feeling of dread that they put in the movie, like in small scenes with the two girls, it's got a horror element to it. It's not just comedy jokes, you know, through the entire movie.
Yeah.
Like, the girls are not strong enough to defend themselves in all scenes, and so they get into some shit. So, I mean, it's, you know, and then the evil scientists then that are, like, I mean, they're every stereotypical authority figure in any zombie movie is always bad, and this movie, like, is the epitome of that, and it came out before most of the other ones after that even went with that cliche. So, I love it. I think it's a good movie, and I wish more people watched it.
Yeah, definitely worth watching so that you could say that you've watched it. This is a movie that if it's on TV, I'm probably going to watch it again.
Okay.
So, but I'm not going to go out of my way to watch it again.
Okay.
I know for a fact that Noah didn't like the ending, and you got to admit, aside from the DMK, that was, you know, if you didn't see the beginning, he didn't see the beginning. I don't know how long it's been since he's watched this movie. But I just don't think that he just didn't like how it ended, and that's fine.
It's a little too squeaky clean, probably.
Yeah.
For him.
Yeah, probably. So.
And one thing that a lot of the reviewers like to point out, or like critics of it, they're like, man, it must be nice to live in an apocalypse where you've got working electricity that nobody's there to actually. And I'm like, fair point. Fair point.
But would there not be electricity during an apocalypse?
For a few days, maybe, and then it would be completely out, and then you'd be on your own.
You think so?
Maybe.
Well, because don't we have, like, maybe I'm just so naive.
Especially back then. You got to imagine what time period you're in. They had less automation, so And unless it was a nuclear plant, which even then you got to be worried about if I'm that close to it, mm-hmm. nobody's there to keep it, you know, from going, you know, nuclear, you know, going hot or going nuclear. I'm going to die from that, you know, but
okay.
There's a time period there where it takes so long for those generators, cause they have to be fed with something like coal or something like that to keep moving. So eventually they're going to power down.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, and this. But
how
movie
many
is,
days do they actually have in this movie?
Yeah, I mean, it's only a span of a few days.
A few days, so I can give them the benefit that a few days they'll still have electricity.
Exactly. So there's that. This movie, for me, I'm gonna just throw out my rating and then qualify it. I'm giving it a 3.5 because it was a little bit of a snooze fest for me, almost towards the end. Which rightfully so, because, you know, that's when the action kind of, well, no, it's there. I think at the end, it was the end that I started kind of like I was losing it. I didn't like, it wasn't that it had holes in the storyline. It's that it kind of just barely touched important details to help you move on to the next thing or understand how something happened. So that took a lot out of it for me. Visually, while everything looked good, it just had that too much of that 80s feel, and it was just a bit much for me, even though someone like me should respect and appreciate that. So there wasn't enough zombies. There was a good enough threat, though. You never knew when something was going to happen. So I do appreciate that, but really would have liked it. The zombies looked so good, it would have been nice to see a few more of them.
It would have been nice to have more in the movie. I don't disagree with that. And yeah. if they were to do a remake of this movie, which would be hard because they wouldn't get the feel right of the 80s, which some people, there's a lot of people nostalgic for the 90s. If they set it in the 90s and had some of that worked in, that might work. If they really leaned into the 90s nostalgia, but just had more of the zombies in it, that might work.
Exactly. So, like I said, it's a mid for me. So a 3, 3.5. I think 3.5 is a little more than mid. It's good, but it didn't really capture my attention super well. But I will give it the respect that it deserves, because this is not a shitty movie.
Especially not for the budget. I mean, it was it was double the cost of Evil Dead, like the original Evil Dead. I mean, yeah. and it looks a lot fancier. I'm just going to say it. Yeah. It does. I mean,
did they have to do a lot of cuts to this film?
I don't feel like they did because they didn't, because where they're dry zombies and they kind of like cut away when there's any, like, you know, even the one zombie at the beginning of the movie, he throws out a chunk, which you think is Larry, but it doesn't really dwell on it. You know, like a piece of meat, you know, that he's been eating.
Oh,
on.
Yeah. I thought it was a brain for some reason.
It doesn't show any real corpses or anything. So they don't really show any major violence.
I don't mean cuts to like cut violence and to give it a decent rating. I mean cuts like, did they have to cut certain scenes to make it shorter or anything like that?
They had to do all kinds of things to make sure that they came within that budget because they couldn't afford to even redo lines if they, you know, they just had to kind of, you know, work with what they had.
So if I had to point out a problem, it would either be that they cut things that skipped over really key details to really smoothly transition you to the next thing, or everything but the writing itself was good. So it had a good storyline. It had decent actors.
The story and the actors is what makes this movie, for sure.
And the visuals are pretty fucking good.
So, the red and everything, yes. Mm-hmm,
but I think that the writing was lacking, unfortunately, just enough that I caught it and I was like, what? That, or, you know, they cut it in the scene to where it's like, okay, well, you get to it, you get why they did it, but it was like, it's explained afterwards, and I'm like, I don't like that. I'm not a fan.
So here's my question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, I would have picked it if I didn't really like it. And that's going to be the same for yours, you know, whenever you pick yours.
Mm-hmm.
But if they remade this, tried to go for that 90s nostalgia, because I feel like I hate to say this for anybody that's younger, 2000s on doesn't have anything that cements it in anybody's mind as being a time period.
And 2000s is when we were entering adulthood, so you would think that that'd be great for us, you know?
Yeah, well, but there's culturally, like, there was nothing that, like, define that decade, like, whatsoever.
Bimbos.
But the 90s.
Yeah.
The 90s had a look, and the 90s had, you know, all that. If they remade this, set it in the 90s for the millennials to get that, you know, nostalgia on.
Yeah.
Made it to where they had a bigger budget, they could afford more zombies, and, like, you know, maybe took and maybe went more of a horror bent with it, like that scene where Hector goes back to his parents' house and he has to fend off multiple zombies to try to even get out of there, and it kind of, like, focuses on that more. Do you think that would be, like, just knock it up to
absolutely,
you know,
absolutely it would. I'm it's weird that this isn't even a horror comedy, but I'm needing more horror. So, and of course, it's insane that I'm asking for more horror and zombie season. You would think I'd be like, this is great.
That's one reason why I like it so much, because it got a lot of implied dread in the movie, but it's not in your face, which if it was added, that would knock it up a notch. Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely. It'd definitely be up there like 4, 4.5, could possibly be a 5. It's hard to give a zombie movie a 5 for me, though. So...
But I think that, you know, cause some movies, horror movies, the remakes, like the Evil Dead remake, knock up the horror so much and become their own thing and become so well, Dawn of the Dead example.
Yeah.
And I'm almost turning on Dawn of the Dead to where I think I prefer the Zack Snyder one versus Romero's. I hate to say that. Still, there's another movie that's Romero's that's way better than all of them, but of those two versions, I think I prefer Zack Snyder's, and I don't think I'm the only one that feels that way now.
Yeah.
I think that this is one of those movies that, just due to the low budget that it originally started with and the fact that it has so many good elements to its benefit, it just needed a little extra oomph that it never really got, that it would be a perfect candidate for a remake. Like,
yeah,
you know... I think it just would.
It's possible they could ruin it, though, too. I mean, that's always a possibility, I guess, so.
The nostalgia works for it, but like I said, if you leaned into another era of nostalgia, then I think that's where you would get it at. But you'd have to lean into that, because that's part of this movie's charm. If it wasn't so 80s, I don't think it would even have that going for a lot of the fans, so.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's, you know, but I mean, I appreciate where you come from on that, because I was like, okay, she'll either really hate this or it'll be enough to where it's like, okay, it wasn't that bad, you know, so.
I think if anyone who's been following this show, and I think Cody would probably be a great, you know, Cody or even Donnie G or Daphne, anyone who's listening and has heard the I'm starting to understand better, not just watching the film and just enjoying it because I'm watching it. I want to keep that aspect, but it's hard because now I'm starting to notice more things, whereas before I was just there responding to you, but I'm starting to actually notice things more now. And so I'm able to give a film more credit than just, well, I had a great time watching it. If I was just watching this film just to watch it and hadn't noticed most things, I would not have liked this film. It would have been a 2 for me.
Well, and that makes sense, because there's a lot of this movie is subtle in what it delivers across. You have to be paying attention.
Exactly.
This isn't like a look at your phone type movie.
It's not. No. So, yeah, and that's the hardest part. Evil Dead would have been different. I would have still probably rated them the same way, but I was really, really thinking that I was going to hate Army of Darkness, which is why I didn't watch it and was just going to let you and Noah review it. It looked cheesy AF, and I was like, I'm not going to enjoy this film. And then I watched it, and while I, like I said, rolled the fuck out of my eyes to the back of my head, I was able to see into it and be like, God, this isn't as bad as I was thinking, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, I'm going to try to play devil's advocate on your pick whenever we cover it next time and try to, I mean, I won't do it as well because I'm not like some of the other fans of the Resident Evil series that I'm so sacrosanct with.
Are you not like those other fans? Are you a cool fan?
No, I'm what I'm saying is I'm not one of those fans that's like so bought or tied up in the lore that like if it deviates, I'm going to be throwing a fit. I get that.
Yeah.
I get that a lot. Believe me, with Stephen King movies, the ones that people love. It, you don't love them if you're a book fan. You really don't. I mean, that just goes with the territory. And a game has so much more room to let that spool go for the story and for everything else. So I get it. I get why they don't like it. But I'm coming to it from like, okay, I've got 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me a decent story in that amount of time that makes sense? And that's, but I'm going to try to nitpick it a little bit because I do have some nitpicks with that movie.
Oh yeah,
and one of them's a character, and I do love that character in the games, and I hated what they did in that movie with him.
And that's totally fine. For the record, and you said what? Okay, what? Let's revisit real quick. What would have been your absolute favorite movie for Zombie Season if we didn't already review it or weren't reviewing it at a later date?
Day of the Dead from George Romero.
Okay,
best zombie movie that was ever made.
Okay.
Hands down.
Which I thought was the one we were going to review. If we're being honest, my favorite movie, but we already reviewed it, was going to be Warm Bodies.
Okay.
But, I mean,
that makes sense for, I mean, how you would, I mean, because it's got enough of the zombie stuff, mm-hmm. but it's not. But it doesn't delve into like the darkness of it enough to where it's that you can watch it and be happy with it.
Love the storylines. Read the sequels of the books. I don't think they're movie worthy. Unfortunately, we did kind of briefly discuss that. There is a prequel book that I have not read yet. I think I might get around to it. I don't know. I don't hate the sequel. It's just. I don't know. It's kind of, it was dragging, and then there's another book to read, but it's hard to get. They don't have it in physical form anymore, so I think I'm just going to have to audio it. There's no audio available, so I have to do the e-reader of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is not terrible. Yeah. I don't mind doing an e-reader. But Warm Bodies would have been my favorite. Now, I have played the original Resident Evil game. So I have played it, and I played it to completion. So, good. We got that, but I am reviewing this movie as a movie that was made. I am not reviewing it as an adaption of the video game.
And that's where I'm trying to come from as somebody who 2 was the one that I played to completion and 4.
Yes.
With one character being the common denominator between the 2 of them and one character that's also in this movie that we're going to be reviewing that might be the issue.
And and that's totally respectable. You can't completely dismiss the game at all because there were certain elements that when you saw it happen in the movie, you remembered it in the game and I was like, what's happening? So.
And we'll get to it. Why I think it's still, is why I enjoy it myself, even though it's got those issues. But bringing this up, because this is my pick on this one, I said it rounded out my top 5. Officially, if I was zombie movies or whatever, it would be Day of the Dead number 1,
yeah,
without hesitation. Shaun of the Dead number 2, we've already covered. 28 Days Later, we've already covered.
Oh God.
Return of the Living Dead, which we'll get to, and this movie. That's why it rounds out my top 5, because and this one obviously is the most, there's comedy in some of those other ones, but this one is less horror based than some of the other ones.
Yeah.
That makes a difference.
Oh my God. I feel like there'd be a lot of horror comedies in my list, but Dawn of the Dead, the remake, is up there for me.
I would put Dawn of the Dead probably at my 6. Like, it's close. It's right on the verge. The remake, okay. Yeah, not the original.
Yeah,
I like the original for parts, but I know we're dragging this on. But like, the remake is just better and just like conveying that fear.
Yeah.
in a person.
I think so too. So yeah. It's in the top 3. It's for sure in my top 3 if it's because Warm Bodies is my number 1. So,
yeah, I was surprised. I don't know if I would have had the same picks as Day has never moved from its spot since the first time I watched it.
You watched it. No, I'm just kidding.
Since the Day of the Dead that I watched it, but and then Shaun instantly shot up to the top 5 right from the get go, but. Like, the other ones have moved around, and I appreciate this one so much just because I don't feel like And maybe it's in my top five just because I don't feel like enough people know about it. You know, there's that factor that somehow makes a movie cooler when nobody knows about it and you do. South Park was that way for me back in the day. Me and my buddies were the only ones in my local community that could even get access to it. And we'd be talking about it at school and nobody'd know the reference because they didn't know what the show was. And then when everybody was quoting South Park, then it kind of lost its cool.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's a little bit elitist, but yeah, there's a little bit of that with it, you know?
I watched it before it was cool. No, yeah, it was kind of a hidden thing back in the day. And it wasn't so much a hidden thing. It was that a lot of the people that I knew weren't allowed to watch it at the age we were.
Well, it was just in my area. It wasn't available on any of the cable company stuff. And then, like, I had, like, my dad had a satellite system, one of those big, you know, fucking dish versions, and I could, you know, watch it that way. And then my buddies would come over and we, you know, watch it that way. So
exactly. Oh my God.
But I'm interested. I don't know if you'll be able to come up with a top five of your favorite that you've, you know, other than what you've already mentioned, but we'll see whenever you, you know, label off, you know, your favorite the next time we review this.
All I know is that for sure we've got Warm Bodies. We've got Dawn of the Dead. We've got Raccoon City. That was a surprise one. That one, I think my kids watched it two or three times before I finally watched it. So I was sleeping on that one for a minute. And then we've got Scout's Guide.
Oh, that, yeah, that's pretty fun.
That was a surprise one for me. So that leaves room for others. You might be surprised that I'm not mentioning Night of the Living Dead because that was the original one that fucked me up. I can't keep that in my favorites. It's not that I don't respect it. It's just that, like, that movie fucked me up for life. And it's not even that scary compared to, like, Dawn of the Dead, you know?
Also, I want to throw this in because this does pertain to this movie. You know how Samantha has the dream within a dream in this movie, or the nightmare within a nightmare? She wakes up twice. Return of the Living Dead is the only movie in my entire life that's ever done that to me. I had a nightmare within a nightmare.
Oh, like, shit. Legit.
I woke up from a nightmare about zombies to see the tar man standing over my bed bedroom, totally as it looked. And then as he was reaching to attack me, I woke up again for the second time.
Yeah. I forgot a movie in my top five, 28 Days Later.
I was getting ready to say that one has to be, you know, somewhere in that area.
Top five. So that's what we've got right now with, ironically, a rom-com zom-drom as the number one. So there we are, folks. Now you know where I'm coming from. I'm sorry that I'm not sorry.
Well, on the next one, we're going to cover your favorite, and then I think we're going to finally get you to watch the Evil Dead remake and see how badly it scarred you for life, because it is way more intense than anything else in the series.
Well, I'm excited because obviously, clearly it sounds like I'm going to get what I've been asking for, and maybe I'll be sorry.
I think you will be because... Yeah. The one in the basement in that movie that's under the trap door is way worse than anything in any of the other versions, period.
Well, I'm so excited.
All right, folks. Well, that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit.